On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There was no Top Gun flight suit this time, no mission accomplished banner, no strut. Just an American president, a bit pale, almost pleading with the American people to give him one more chance in a war that has gone on much longer, at much greater cost, and with much less success than surely he ever really imagined. Situation in Iraq, unacceptable to the American people, and, said President Bush, unacceptable to me. Failure would be a disaster, he said. But his demeanor and new plan itself acknowledged that failure has now come close. The polls say get out, the president still going in. Up next, On Point, reaction from Iraq, Washington, and you, as President Bush orders more U.S. troops to Baghdad. We'll talk today to voices and observers in the U.S., in Iraq, all around this issue, Iraqi politicians, U.S. military. Right now from Washington, I'm joined by Richard Wolff, senior White House correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Richard Wolff, thank you for being with us.
Tom, good to be with you.
Where does this leave the president? Is this his last shot on Iraq?
No, I don't think it is, both because of the nature and the inclination of the president. He's invested so much into this war, so much of himself and so much of the nation, that I think it's exceptionally hard for him to revisit his initial judgment. And secondly, it's very easy because of the hype to look at this as being a sort of all or nothing gamble. That's not really what we saw last night.
Really? Why not? Why do you say that?
Well, for a start, the size of the commitment here, 20,000 troops, an extra $1 billion, as you point out, looking at how much they've already spent, that's a drop in the bucket. And 20,000 troops doesn't even take us to the maximum presence of American troops in Iraq over the last three, 4 years. So if this was all or nothing, you might have expected more. What this really is a far more cautious and circumspect approach here. And the reason for that caution and circumspection is because this White House, this president, has been disappointed many, many times before by the Iraqi government. And this plan, above all, relies on the Iraqi government to deliver.
Such as it is the plan a done deal? The president's the commander-in-chief. Orders have already been cut here. Are 20,000 more U.S. troops in Iraq now inevitable? Will it happen?
Well, the White House says it'll only happen if the Iraqis actually meet their targets, their troops show up for duty. I think what you're hinting at is something slightly different, which is, can Congress intervene and do something about these troops? It seems in the short run that they're not going to, but this is a rapidly changing environment, and the rapid changes are not so much what Democrats are saying, although there are some interesting things being done by Senator Kennedy here in opposing the increase. What's really shifting is Republican sentiment. And the reluctance of Republicans, especially senators, to go out there and support the president is a very new development for this White House and this war.
Richard Wolff, listen with us for a moment to the president last night. I wonder if there is indeed a new strategy, a new perspective on this war in the way he once again framed it.
Failure in Iraq would be a disaster for the United States. The consequences of failure are clear. Radical Islamic extremists would grow in strength and gain new recruits. They would be in a better position to topple moderate governments, create chaos in the region, and use oil revenues to fund their ambitions. Iran would be emboldened in its pursuit of nuclear weapons. Our enemies would have a safe haven from which to plan and launch attacks on the American people.
So there's the framing from the president last night, and here his answer, his solution.
So America will change our strategy to help the Iraqis carry out their campaign to put down sectarian violence and bring security to the people of Baghdad. This will require increasing American force levels. So I've committed more than 20,000 additional American troops to Iraq.
Richard Wolff at the White House. Is this a new perspective? Is it a new strategy?
No, it's not. I've been scratching my head on this one and talking to White House officials about it, and well, they're calling it a new strategy, but really it amounts to the same old strategy, but with new tactics. There are new tactics. There's more embedding of American troops. There's a more focus on reconstruction through these what they call provincial reconstruction teams. And there's this greater emphasis on the Iraqis living up to these benchmarks. But it is the same strategy that has tried and failed before. That's to say, Iraqis leading these security sweeps with American support. The problem is it hasn't worked before, and the critical question is, why should it work this time? The White House thinks it will, and they're taking this cautious approach over the next few months to make sure that that judgment is correct.
You're up close in the White House. What do you make of the president's attitude, his resolve? It wasn't long ago at all he was saying, you know, we're on a path to victory here. A very different picture last night. Even Britt Hume at Fox News said the president, he said, I thought he came across as stiff, nervous, and anxious to get it over with. How do you assess the president's engagement, his resolve at this point, Richard Wolff?
Well, all my reporting, and I've been covering the guy since 99, all my reporting suggests that people close to him say he is resolved, he's committed, he wants to see this through, and he believes that victory will vindicate him. But then I look at his face and how he's aged and the lines and the grayness, and I have to say this war, this strategy that he expresses so much confidence in, it isn't showing through in the way he looks. He is much more old and much more stressed in the last year even than I think I've ever seen him before.
Richard Wolff at the White House, thanks very much for being with us today.
Anytime.
Criticism from many sides, some support, but Democrats in particular very strong against it. Some Republicans as well. Here's Illinois Senator Barack Obama speaking from the Capitol last night to MSNBC's Keith Olbermann after the president's speech.
I am not persuaded that 20,000 additional troops in Iraq is going to solve the sectarian violence there. In fact, I think it'll do the reverse. I think it takes pressure off the Iraqis to arrive at the sort of political accommodation that every observer believes is the ultimate solution to the problems we face there. So I am going to actively oppose the president's proposal.
Barack Obama last night, he will actively oppose, he says. Let's go to Iraq, to Baghdad. Sudarshan Raghavan, Baghdad bureau chief for The Washington Post, joins us. Sudarshan Raghavan, can you give us a sense of reaction there from different quarters in the half day since the president has made his speech?
Right. Good to be with you, Tom. Obviously, in Iraq, like anything else, the reaction is mixed. The Sunni politicians are particularly concerned about one thing, the fact that the Iraqi troops will be asked to lead again, the charge here. The concern amongst them is that many of them feel that the Iraqi troops are Shiite dominated, which in fact they are, and they're concerned that this will lead to more attacks against Sunnis in Baghdad, driving more of them out to westward. The Shiites, of course, are also concerned. Political aides of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki we've spoken with and are a little weary of having several thousand more American troops here. There's a deep mistrust of U.S. intentions here. They're concerned that somehow this may lead to a lessening of their power.
Does it look to you, Sudarshan Raghavan, as though the government in Baghdad and the American White House are on the same page here? Whatever the strategy is now, is it shared? Do they hold it in common? There's a lot of talk about Shiites going for, Shiite hegemony in Iraq. President Bush seems to premise this on a government in Baghdad committed to kind of non-sectarian power sharing.
That's not true at all, I believe. Certainly people we've been talking to painted a completely different portrait, even inside the Maliki government. The Maliki government in particular wants U.S. troops, wants its own troops to focus much more on tackling the Sunni Arab insurgency. In fact, they've even made proposals for U.S. troops to stay on the periphery of Baghdad and leave the inner core of Baghdad to Iraqi troops. The Maliki government sees the Sunni Arab insurgency as the biggest threat. Now, of course, there's grave concern amongst U.S. military officials who see that this may end up opening the way for more Shiite militia control over Baghdad, in particular by Muqtada Sadr, the radical cleric that is a key political benefactor of Maliki. So there's different viewpoints here on what to do about the current security environment and how to approach it in Baghdad from both the Bush administration and the Maliki government.
If it depends on the Maliki government swinging in with this policy to make it successful, Does it have a chance?
It is a key assumption by the Bush administration. I mean, there's on one hand, you know, they're expecting the Iraqi army's gain strength and training, and of course the American help to really take the lead. The second assumption is that the Maliki government will overcome its sectarian divides and divisions and come together and deal with the security in a non-sectarian way. As of now, I mean, both when we talk with people across the board, both you know, the sense that in either scenario is a major uphill battle. There's a even amongst American troops, which I'm currently embedded in today. Speaking of a bunch of them today, and they, you know, they still feel that, you know, that the Iraqi army, while there has been some progress, are not yet up to the challenge of leading the way, taking charge of the security in Baghdad.
Sudarshan Raghavan, Baghdad bureau chief for the Washington Post, thanks very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
We're talking this hour about President Bush's push for more in Iraq, more troops, more money. Condoleezza Rice out this morning at a White House briefing following up on the president's speech. She will go to the Middle East and Europe on Friday with stops in Israel and Saudi Arabia. Here she is.
Among Americans and Iraqis, there is no confusion over one basic fact. It is the Iraqis who are responsible for what kind of country Iraq will be. It is they who must decide whether Iraq will be characterized by national unity or sectarian conflict.
An open question there. Dissent, yes, among Democrats, also among some Republicans. Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, Senator, saying this is a dangerously wrong-headed strategy that will drive America deeper into an unwinnable swamp at great cost. Oregon Republican Senator Gordon Smith has been very critical of the idea of a surge. He spoke last night with NPR's Robert Siegel.
We have one commander-in-chief at a time, and as we speak, troops are moving, and I guess all I can say at this point, clearly my view, which was not to do this surge, did not prevail. And now I'm left to hope the president's right and I'm wrong, that this will be the difference this time. That is my earnest hope. And I just simply hope, as the president throws this Hail Mary pass, that the Iraqis are in the end zone and willing to catch it this time, because they don't have another time.
Hope and a Hail Mary pass. There's Oregon Senator Republican Gordon Smith. Last night, you can join us at 800-423-8255. We're joined right now from Washington by William Kristol, editor of the Weekly Standard, chairman and co-founder of the Think Tank Project for the New American Century, co-author of The War Over Iraq. William Kristol, you wanted more troops. The president's sending them. Is this what you asked for?
I would quibble with certain things, but absolutely. Look, in the last 2 months, he replaced the Secretary of Defense, which was the right thing to do. He replaced the commanders on the ground, who, you know, are admirable and patriotic men, but were not pursuing a winning strategy. He's put the best people, I gather, in the U.S. military in to try to make this work, Petraeus and Odierno. And we should give it a chance to work, unless people think it's hopeless. If people think it's impossible, then I guess we need to get out, and people need to explain how that happens. But otherwise, we need to try to make it work.
Do you see this as a Hail Mary pass, Gordon Smith's word there, Senator Smith, his phrase, or a kind of last best chance? Or do you see this as a down payment on what might even be further escalation somehow?
I think it has a decent chance of working. I've tried to study pretty hard the Keene-Kagan report that lays out the case for this. I've talked to people who are in Iraq and have just been in Iraq on the military and civilian side who think this has a reasonable chance of working. I mean, everyone can trash Maliki and trash the Iraqis all they want, but the truth is the Iraqi army has held together, the Iraqi government has held together. It's not quite what we would hope it would be, but it's not unimpressive for a three-year-old democracy in the middle of the Middle East. And I don't rule out the possibility, if Petraeus comes back in 3 months and says we're making progress, I think I could do more with an extra two brigades, of course the president's going to give him that.
General Odierno, who's now in charge of operations on the ground in Iraq, Bill Kristol, said recently that if he got these troops, he might be able to do something with them, but it would take another 2 or 3 years. What kind of time frame are you looking at now?
People I've talked to think that you have to think of this as a couple of years, you know, overall. Now, I think you might see real progress. I hope we will in 6 to 8 months once the troops are on the ground and once the Iraqi government is able to get more security and move ahead in some other ways. But I don't think anyone really thinks we can get out of there or appreciably reduce numbers certainly before a year and a half. And I would say this is basically the rest of the Bush presidency. He's going to try to make Iraq work. I think it's the right thing to do, and I think he has a reasonable shot at prevailing.
It all seems to count on the Iraqis buying into the non-sectarian mold of the future that the White House is pushing here. You said people are trashing Maliki, but of course the White House own security advisor Stephen Hadley effectively said in that memo that Maliki was ignorant or obdurate here. If the Shia leadership, if Maliki has a different agenda, can this work?
Look, he has a mixed agenda. Obviously, he's nervous that we're going to get out, and if we're going to get out, he's going to have to depend on sectarian militias. It has a heck of a lot of better chance of working with a lot of U.S. troops and a firm U.S. commitment than with fewer troops and the U.S. getting out and with everyone looking at the U.S. and thinking, my God, they're gone in a year. Look at the domestic debate in the U.S. They're gone in a year, and we've got to make our bets with our sectarian militias. That, I think, is a lot of what's happened over the last year. Now, I can't, obviously, no one knows if it's going to work. No one knows if it's not going to work. And I think as a matter of responsibility, again, unless people really are convinced it's just absolutely hopeless, I just think as a matter of political responsibility, the president is doing the right thing. Obviously, I'm all for pressuring and Maliki and working with him and pushing him in a non-sectarian way. That's a complicated matter. It's a complicated country. But I think he's made some pretty good faith efforts, incidentally. Everyone says, oh, it's a sectarian government. It's not a sectarian government. The Kurdish president, who happens to be Sunni, there are Sunnis in the government. The Sunni insurgency is the thing that really got this going in a terrible way. It's now triggered, unfortunately, obviously, sectarian violence on both sides. But I think they have a reasonable plan to try to turn this around, and God knows, I hope it works.
William Kristol, editor at the Weekly Standard, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
William Kristol, he was in the neocon clubhouse that helped get this going. Let's get another perspective here from Lawrence Korb, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He was assistant secretary of defense in the Reagan administration, 81 to 85. Lawrence Korb, thanks very much for being with us. What's your top line on the president's announcement, his new plan unveiled last night?
Too little, too late. And it provides the wrong incentives for the Iraqis.
The wrong incentives? How?
Well, because what the president said to the Iraqis last night is, you don't have unlimited time to do all of these things. You're going to wear out the patience of the American people. But he didn't then say, if you don't, this is what we're going to do. I think it's interesting that Mr. Maliki obviously has been pressured into this position. We know that when he met with the president in Amman, Jordan in December, he said, no, we want to take more responsibilities. The military commanders who've been fighting the war, General Abizaid, the only Arab-American general officer in the United States Army, and General Casey, who've been fighting this, said, no, it'll increase the Iraqi dependence on us. Now, for example, we had a surge in October. Mr. Maliki promised that he would send 6 battalions. He only sent 2. Now we're saying that you got to send 3 brigades. If he couldn't get 6 battalions, how are we going to get 3 brigades, which is, 4 or 5 times more than that number? It also says that Mr. Maliki is going to take military control in all the 18 provinces by November. Well, then American forces have to respond to what he says? Will his forces... Shiite, which are predominantly Shia, are they going to go after Mahdi? I mean, the Mahdi army's got 60,000 people. They're actually in better trained and more effective than the Iraqi military. As Mr. Wilt said earlier, the army's predominantly Shia. What happens when they go into the Sunni neighborhoods? Is that going to increase the sectarian violence?
And what about the stepping on the gas from Washington? 17,500 troops or something like that for Baghdad, 4,000 for Anbar. We've had 150,000 there, often 132,000 now. There was a long drum roll for this speech and this announcement, but is this a big deal? And even if it's just about Baghdad, securing Baghdad, is 17,500 troops, roughly doubling the U.S. presence there, is it a sufficient step up to do that?
No, it's not. I mean, everybody is talking about General Petraeus, the lieutenant general who wrote the counterinsurgency manual and who's going to be going over there to replace General Casey. If you read his counterinsurgency memo, you're going to need 100,000 troops to get Baghdad under control based upon the force-to-population ratios that he's talking about. And we're sending these troops in gradually. It's going to take several months to get them in. We don't know how long they're going to be there. If you want to maintain this level of troops indefinitely. You're going to have to call up more Guard and Reserve units. This morning, Secretary Gates said, no, we're not going to change the policy of not calling them up for more than 1 year out of every five. What that means, you'll put incredible strains on your active forces.
Lawrence Korb, I want to begin to bring our listeners in here. We'll hear soon from Iraqis. First, Adam is calling from Galena, Illinois. Hi, Adam. You're on the air.
Good morning. What I think the president has done is he's trying to provoke the Iranians and the Shiites into a further war, an escalation of the war. I think what the president did last night in Erbil by attacking the Iranian consulate, and then what we've done is put the Sadrists in Sadr City on notice that we're coming for them. I think he's allowing them to have a little bit of build-up before we get over there, and I think he's looking to start a further war to further his goals as going after the Iranians.
So never mind 20,000 troops. You see even something bigger coming. Lawrence Korb, what do you make of this right on the heels of the speech, U.S. troops going into the Iranian consulate in Erbil in northern Iraq last night? What about this new posture and Iran?
Well, again, they went in without telling the Kurds, who are very upset about it. And the Kurds are our closest, our biggest supporters over there. It certainly is going to provoke the Iranians. The Iranians are involved. They're supporting some of the Shias in the south. And by threatening them last night, the president talked about, you know, we're going to go after your networks. We're going to move a carrier battle group in there. The new commander of Central Command is a naval aviator. So, I mean, you're basically trying to threaten the Iranians. You need their help to get this situation under control, just as they've helped us in Afghanistan. You know, they've sent several hundred million dollars in there. They're building roads and highways. They're closing off the border between Iran and Afghanistan. They do not want to see a failed Iraq, an Iraq that collapses. And so they would be willing to work with us, if nothing else, because if Iraq collapses, there'll be millions of refugees streaming into Iran.
The president says, if you're going to criticize this, give me an alternate plan. Is there a good alternative?
You bet there is. I mean, I think what you need to do basically is set a deadline for withdrawal of American troops. The Baker-Hamilton group said, you know, let's stop the combat by 2008. Here at the Center for American Progress, since the fall of 2005, we've been arguing for strategic redeployment, and I would argue you ought to get out within the next 18 months.
Is getting that out a plan that heads off catastrophe? I mean, maybe we're already in the catastrophe, but how does getting out solve the problem?
Well, what it does is it puts the Iraqis on notice that they're going to have to make the political compromises which are necessary to stop the sectarian violence. People talk about, well, we'll get the violence under control. You could put a soldier or a Marine on every street corner in Baghdad until they divide up oil revenues, balance the powers of the provincial and the central governments. Protect minority rights, it won't make a difference. So if you put them on notice and then you launch what the Iraq Study Group, the Baker-Hamilton Group, called a diplomatic surge, where you get all the countries in the region together and say, look, we're out of here in 18 months. It's going to be your problem as well. So we need to work together to ensure we have an Iraq that doesn't threaten any of you or the region.
Lawrence Korb, please stand by. I want to get an Iraqi voice in this conversation. Joining us from London, Dr. Mahmoud Osman. He's a member of Iraq's parliament. He's an independent MP, part of the coalition of the Kurdish coalition in Iraq's parliament. Dr. Osman, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
What do you make of the president's plan? Is this a solution? Does this offer you hope or not?
Well, first of all, I think it's not a strategy, it's tactical. Some changes, tactical changes in the same strategy he had, and it is for the American people, because it was announced at that time when all Iraqis were asleep. I don't know. I think they didn't mean to talk to Iraqis. They meant to talk to Americans only. That's one. Secondly, I think the main plan of this project of last night depends on what the Iraqi government could do. They have got promises from the Iraqi government to deliver on reconciliation, de-Ba'athification, oil, some other points mentioned. militias, but would they deliver? Because we have, they have experience, and the Iraqi government have been examined. I mean, they have in the last 7-8 months they are talking about these points, and they haven't delivered as they should. So why should everybody think that this time they will? So I think if the Iraqis don't deliver, if the Iraqi government can't go forward on these points, make some achievements, then sending troops there would not be useful. It will be counterproductive because they will be stuck inside the town as police. They will police the towns, and in a conflict they don't know much about, the sectarian or whatever it is. This is one side. The second side, I think the whole question, which what's going on in Iraq, on the streets and in the conflicts, it is political. It is not a security conflict. It has security aspect, but it's a political conflict. If the leaders of the political groups, Iraqi political groups, also the religious leaders of both sects, if they don't get together, if they are not decided to solve the problem, if they are not willing to do it, some other people couldn't do it for them. Neither American forces nor Kurdish forces would help in doing these things.
So Mahmoud Osman, let me ask you, if I may, you're the
political conflict.
Let me ask you then, you're the Iraqi parliamentarian. What would you like to see from the United States at this point?
Well, I think at this point things are more complicated, and I like to see a timetable for withdrawal from Iraq, United States. I think they have been always rejecting this. I think United States should have a timetable for withdrawal, of course, balanced with the increase in the capability of Iraqi forces, I mean, in accordance with the Iraqi government, abilities for that. Because some people say, if you put the timetable, then it will play into the hands of terrorists. Yes, they benefit from it, but it will be more beneficial for Iraqi people. Many people in Iraq, they are against the United States occupation, and they are carrying arms, they are insurgents. But if you show these people that there is a time when this tunnel won't finish, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, America will get out on the basis of this timetable or whatever it is, you could persuade their own people not to carry arms, to come into the political process, as long as the question would be ended, I mean, the occupation politically.
And a final question, if the Americans pull out, is civil war inevitable?
With the political groups, Iraqi political groups, Iraqi religious groups, as much as they have influence in them, to get together to work out a formula for themselves. Otherwise, and they be helped by America, and to involve some regional countries also to help it. But what I saw yesterday, what I heard yesterday, first, America will go against Syria and Iran more, and that will create more problems.
Dr. Osman, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Lawrence Korb is with us, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, served as Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration. Here's Defense Secretary Robert Gates this morning at a White House briefing following up on the president's speech last night.
At this pivotal moment, the credibility of the United States is on the line in Iraq. Governments in the region, both friends and adversaries, are watching what we do and will draw their own conclusions about our resolve and the steadfastness of our commitments. Whatever one's views on how we got to this point in Iraq, there is widespread agreement that failure there would be a calamity that would haunt our nation in the future and in the region.
That's Gates this morning. Last night, Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin harshly critical of the Bush plan after the president's speech.
In ordering more troops to Iraq, the president is ignoring the strong advice of most of his own top generals, General John Abizaid. Until recently, the commanding general in Iraq and Afghanistan said, and I quote, "More American forces prevent the Iraqis from doing more, from taking more responsibility for their own future."
Point, counterpoint there, and a lot for Americans to decide. Let's go to Ron in Waldorf, Maryland. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Hi. The thing I wanted to say is sometimes there's no right way to do the wrong thing. It's a question for me of theory versus practice. Now, suppose for a moment China tried to invade the United States. Bush's opinion is against us. Bush is politically weak. And China said, you know what, we're going to liberate the American people. So they come over here. Obviously, you've got the cultural difference. You've got the language barrier. And things don't work out for them. Well, they'll go back in Beijing and they'll Well, the reason that it didn't work out in America is because we didn't send enough troops in, or because we didn't have armored Hummers, or it doesn't take into account, all this theory doesn't take into account the intangibles and the reality on the ground.
Ron, what's your background? Do you know it from service?
Yes, I'm in the Navy, but obviously I don't speak for the military. I've just witnessed this, firsthand.
You're in the military now. Is this view common, or are you an outlier in the U.S. military today?
I really can't speak intelligently on what everybody else thinks. I can speak for myself, and I think it's just a common sense approach that sometimes there's no right way to do the wrong things, and sometimes you just have to take your medicine. I mean, it would mean a tremendous loss of face for the United States, but sometimes you just have to take your medicine.
The view of one Navy man. Ron, thanks for your call. Let's get another military view here, if I may. Joining us from Monterey, California, Lawrence Corps, please stand by in Washington. We're joined by Dr. Caleb Sepp, retired Army Special Forces Colonel. He's a professor of defense studies at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, was an advisor to the Iraq Study Group headed by Jim Baker and Lee Hamilton. He's an expert on counterinsurgency, been in Iraq many times as an advisor to General George Casey. He has two sons, currently serving in Iraq. Dr. Sepp, Colonel Sepp, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, great to hear from you.
So you watched, I'm sure, very closely last night as the president spoke. You're a military man and a scholar. What do you say?
Well, there's some good points that the president laid out. There was there was a recapitulation of some fundamentals, the right kind of fundamentals of a counterinsurgency operation. I'm partisan here. I was pleased to see a number of the recommendations that were made to him by the Iraq Study Group, strategic points that were already in place by General Casey, raised again. You know,
such as
oil distribution of oil revenues and reconciliation.
These are the benchmarks that they want from the Maliki government. Show that they're reaching out, giving Sunnis and Kurds a reassurance that they've got a place at the table.
Exactly. But the military component concerns me. Just because of all the things the military is now going to have to do. The president endorsed more advisors, as the Iraq Study Group had recommended. He's calling for an increase in the number and the manning of the provincial reconstruction teams.
Now, what are those exactly, Caleb? Sepp, we heard a lot about that, but what is that?
These are civil military teams that are intended to work on a model that had begun in Afghanistan, and Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad had brought the concept with him when he came from the embassy in Kabul to Baghdad.
This is for rebuilding, for bringing new infrastructure, repairing damage, all the rest?
Exactly, and it's supposed to be a combination of both military and civilian personnel bringing in different kinds of expertise.
Okay, so we're talking about stepping that up, doubling the number. Is that a big deal to you? Will that work?
It's the issue is just with advising and just with leading combat troops, is it's not the number of soldiers, you know, the 19 and 20 year old soldiers and Marines, but it's these veteran captains and sergeants that make all of this happen, and the advisory effort and the PRT, the Provincial Reconstruction Team effort, to this point, have admittedly and openly been on the verge of failure for lack of the right kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been resident in the regular army but if they're going to be sending in combat troops, they're going to stay in the regular army. They're not going to be available for these other efforts.
So in other words, the officers needed to manage the new troops the U.S. is sending in could be doing other things. As I recall, the Iraq Study Group proposal would have had them, among other things, embedded in with Iraqi troops, U.S. officers helping to steer there.
Exactly, it was exactly what the Iraq Study Group recommended, because of the recognition that there really is a finite number of this quality of personnel. Even Brigadier General Dana Pittard, who commands the Iraqi Assistance Group, has said in open press that the Army needs to do a better job of selecting advisors. They have to be drawn from this particular pool.
So there are choices implicit in these decisions. You're saying thumbs up to the benchmarks, but of course the U.S. is not in a position, it would appear, to force Maliki to do these things. You're skeptical about the greater number of troops and whether that may divert the officer corps from what it ought to be doing. What's your bottom line, Caleb Sepp?
General Petraeus has a real challenge on his hand. If there's anybody, in the American military that can manage this, it's him. But I don't know how he will work these numbers.
Jeannie's calling from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeannie, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to make 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
The first that I don't hear talked about, the first is that I think sending in more troops to Iraq is going to decrease American security by strengthening the militant Islamic forces throughout the Middle East. So strengthening the Mahdi army, the Badr Brigade inside Iraq.
Provoked a kind of backlash, you fear there, yeah.
Where you can see Hamas increasing its strength.
Yeah, we hear that. And your second point, Jeannie?
And the other thing that I don't, that Bush and nobody is talking about, is that our risk is directly linked to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and we need to reexamine our support of all action by Israel, because it's putting us in, it's just feeding into Osama bin Laden and President Ahmadinejad's call to get America and its allies out of the Middle East.
Jeannie, we've got it. Lawrence Korb, is this a strategic perspective being offered by Jeannie? She's pulling back the curtain wider, saying we're still provoking more militant response and we've got to get the Israeli-Palestinian problem solved. That's a strategic level look at this. She says, what do you think?
I think she's absolutely correct. For people in the Middle East, the situation between the Israel and Palestine is a very important issue. And the United States has basically been absent from dealing with it. The Iraq Study Group mentioned it. Brent Scowcroft, the National Security Advisor to the first President Bush and President Ford, mentioned this recently in a major op-ed. We've got to do that. I would hope that we would, in my view, we should have a high-level envoy that deals with the countries in the region and also focuses on the situation between Israel and Palestine. Because when the United States is not involved, the countries there think we don't care or we're giving Israel a free hand. And whether we are or not doesn't matter. That's what they think. Our other point, I think, is excellent. By us going into Iraq in the first place, it was the British ambassador to Italy said it was the best recruiting tool that al-Qaeda has had. We've drawn a lot of volunteers from all over the Middle East to come in and fight the Americans because they see us as occupiers. And I think sending more troops in now will enhance that perception that we're occupiers, that we're there indefinitely. We have no intention of leaving. And so I think you need to factor those in when you make these troop decisions. And I think that's what Casey and Abizaid were afraid of by sending more American troops in now.
Let me take a call from Columbia, South Carolina. Tom's on the line. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I like to simplify this thing. Lots of times you can simplify something that's complex by thinking of a similar example that's very simple. Now, let's think perhaps that down my street there's a family that has a tremendous quarrel, and they call me and say, Tom, would you go down there and break that up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I go down there and take out the father who was being mean to the people, like he's Saddam, he's out now. Now you have 4 people left in the family. The trouble is these 4 people are not pulling together. Each one of them are wanting the spoils that are left, that the father left. They're not pulling together. They're not on the same note.
So what should we learn from that, Tom?
If they were on the same note, there'd be no problem. They could take care of their own affairs. We cannot solve this militarily. We cannot solve, it's unsolvable militarily. It would be a real easy thing. They have themselves and us. If they were all pulling on the same note, it'd be a slam dunk.
And they clearly are not. Tom, thanks for that. Caleb Sepp, what about it? The notion that there isn't a political, a military solution here. We've heard that coming out of high military, U.S. brass, for some time now, saying we've got to have a political solution. On the other hand, there's the notion, neocons and others have said, no, go in and protect the population. And you can only do that with military strength. How do you see it, Dr. Sepp?
It's interesting that just before he left office, the former Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, had said almost exactly what you just said, that this is not the problem in Iraq. It is not just military. It's also political and economic. the best kind of action in a counterinsurgency, and that's tied very closely to resolving civil wars, by the way, is that the military action supports political action. The last major surge was in December 04, January 05, as you recall, where we actually brought up troop levels to well over 150,000 to support the election. But it was the action was the political action, was the conduct of the national elections themselves, and the military action just helped ensure that happened. Right now, the current military escalation surge, increase in troops, whatever you want to call it, is tied more to this broad idea of giving the Iraqi central government breathing room, and I'm not sure that that's a cogent political objective.
Guinevere's calling from Saratoga Springs, New York. Guinevere, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Well, thanks. What do you see, Guinevere?
Forgive the electronics that I'm speaking from because it's computer-generated, so if we cut
out... No problem.
Out,
what do you think? No problem. What do you think?
What I feel is that it's time. We need to recognize the handwriting on the wall. It's straining all countries throughout the globe, okay? It is affecting people's emotions terribly. And I'm dismayed to hear from fellow Americans and foreigners what this war is causing on everybody's hearts. We do need to recognize it is time to take two fingers and stick them to your own pulse. Recognize the gift of life for all that is being lost, not just ours, but all of theirs as well. We have to recognize the handwriting on the wall.
That sounds like a vote to get out, not to get in. Guinevere, thanks for your call. Lawrence Korb, what about the politics of this? The president clearly appealing for another chance here from Americans last night, but there was a vote in November widely interpreted as a rejection of more and deeper in Iraq. The polls say, 12 to 18% of Americans only support more troops in Iraq. Is this a commander-in-chief going straight in the face of his own public? What are the implications of that, if you think that's true?
Well, he is going in the face of his own public. Frank Fukuyama, Professor Fukuyama at Johns Hopkins, neoconservative, originally supported the war, put it very well. He said, if you told Americans back in early 2003 that you'd have 3,000 Americans dead, close to 30,000 wounded, several hundred thousand Iraqis dead, and spend close to $500 billion so Iraq could have an election, you'd have been laughed out of the ballpark. And I agree with Dr. Akman, the Kurdish legislator you had on before. We need to set a timetable to get the Iraqis to stand up. Caliph talked about Secretary Rumsfeld. I thought in October he said it's their country, they've got to take control, and the sooner the better. And I think that should be our policy, and that's what the Americans voted for.
Caliph Sepp, it's too much to ask, but if you were the boss, what would you do now? Awfully huge risks here. What's a better way, if there is one?
If I could manage anything at this point, given that orders have been issued, is that the arriving brigades would be, American brigades would be reorganized into advisory teams. The idea that's forwarded in the Keene-Kagan report that simply the example of the Americans is advising enough to raise the quality of the Iraq security forces hasn't worked for the past 2 years. I don't know why it would work now.
But that's not what the president's plan outlines, advisory teams. It's boots on the street.
It's again, this goes back to what General Petraeus might be able to do with this. There's been some talk among American military strategists that this really the troop surge really isn't about Iraq, it's about Iran and signaling them. But that doesn't make sense in the long term. The most important thing is for the Americans to succeed in Iraq, and that's the right kind of signal to Iran.
Retired Army Special Forces Colonel Caliph Sepp at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey with two sons serving right now in Iraq. Caliph Sepp, thank you very much for being
with us
today. Lawrence Korb, it's the Commander-in-Chief. As Caliph Sepp says, the orders have been cut here. Is there any stopping this, or are we on the tracks?
Well, the president is going to send basically one brigade in a month. Theoretically, you could stop it. I think it would be very, very difficult to do that. This is his strategy for better or for worse. And what I worry about is going in the face of American public opinion. You need American support if you want to do this, and we could have an outbreak of isolationism as Americans get so fed up with their voices not being listened to.
We'll be watching Congress to see what more Republicans and Democrats have to say there. Lawrence Korb, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, great to have you with us today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.